Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
As you know, unless you're living under a rock, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle gave a pretty explosive interview on Sunday night to Oprah Winfrey, which was watched by a whopping 17.1 million people in the United States. And many of you may have caught it on RT2 last night. 725,000 people in this country tuned into that programme. It was certainly popular, but was it iconic? Communications consultant and broadcaster Anton Savage is here to discuss what makes an interview become legendary and also to talk through some of the greats. So Anton, first things first, was this a communications masterclass from Harry and Meghan?
Well, unfortunately, as with all of the great answers, that depends. It depends on what they were trying to achieve. So if in advance they had gone out thinking, do you know what we'll do? We'll pour oil on troubled waters. We'll win over the unconverted. We'll calm the fervor of the media. Well, then it was a disaster. If what they went on thinking was, do you know what we'll do? We'll get the people who love us to love us all the more, possibly at the expense of those who hate us, hating us all the more, and we'll create a good hunger for our Spotify deal and our Netflix deal and enshrine ourselves in the public mind for months and years to come, well, then it was a hang out the bunting, pop the champagne, roaring success.
Okay, well, it probably worked from their point of view because their business interests, I know, are quite important to them because he's one of the things he said, wasn't it, was that they've been cut off financially since sometime in 2020 from the royal family. But on the broader subject of iconic interviews, what makes them so?
Well, it tends to boil down, I think, to a combination of one or two or three things. Either brilliant production, brilliant interviewing, or a brilliant guest. And that can be in a good sense or a bad sense. So in some instances, and last night's thing or the weekend interview with Harry and Meghan is a bit like an example of this. In some instances, it is the production and the producers who deserve almost all the credit. Because while Oprah did a brilliant job, the fact that she got the interview that everybody wanted was hugely significant in and of itself. And one of the most legendary in all time is down to that, which is the Frost-Nixon interview, where not only did David Frost hunt down Nixon, he ended up paying him. It was a checkbook journalism, which meant it was actually very hard to get it broadcast because a lot of organizations ran screaming from it. But Nixon was in receipt of direct money for it and then got a share of whatever profits they managed to get for selling on the interview. So purely a production success that they managed to get the disgraced former president. And what they then did in interviewing him was they spent 28 hours, which is what you do if you want to get information out of somebody in Guantanamo Bay. Eventually you'll find something if you keep going for 28 hours. And they did manage to find something. They got him to say that he didn't obstruct justice, but then he went on to be fairly prescient.
I did not commit the crime of obstruction of justice because I did not have the motive required for the commission of that crime.
We've had our
discussion. The lawyers
on
can argue
we
that.
On that, but
I did not commit an impeachable offense. The House has ruled overwhelmingly that I did. That was only an indictment, and it would have to be tried in the Senate. But even if I'd won in the Senate by a vote or two, I would have been crippled. And in any event, for 6 months, the country couldn't afford having the president in the dock in the United States Senate. And there can never be an impeachment in the future in this country without a president voluntarily impeaching himself. I have impeached myself.
How do you mean I have impeached myself?
By resigning.
Okay, so 28 hours to get that. You said that was an exercise in production. It's not always down to that, though, is it?
Oh, God, oh, heavens, no. You can never give the producers credit for everything, Claire.
Most of the time.
There is, of course, those moments where the interviewer crafts it very cleverly, often in planning of some of the questions. And I think if we go back to Oprah, there's another example of that, because one of the things that Oprah is very good at is not only getting the interview to be good, but making sure that she gets the clips that are needed for secondary media and promos. So everybody will have seen the cutaway of her with the hands up looking disgusted in response to the questions about racism or the reaction in that one. She did a similar thing when she had Lance Armstrong. because she again got the defining interview with the disgraced Lance Armstrong, and very cleverly she tackled the accusations of the drug abuse with really direct answers, which gave her lots of promo material, which has run and run and run. So a lot of the credit, a lot of the fact that people remember that interview is down to the fact that she took a yes-no approach to interviewing him.
Yes or no? Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Yes or no? Was one of those banned substances EPO?
Yes.
Did you ever blood dope or use blood transfusions to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Did you ever use any other banned substances like testosterone, cortisone, or human growth hormone?
Yes.
Yes or no? In all seven of your Tour de France victories, did you ever take banned substances or blood dope?
Yes.
Now, that's brilliant, because there's nothing in that that we didn't already know in letters 12 feet high. But the manner in which she paced it out, even years on, the silences that she leaves, it has gone down in history. And I should, by the way, give a bit of credit while we're on the topic of Lance Armstrong. If you're bored at any stage and you want to hear a similarly impactful interview, the Paul Kimmage interview with Lance Armstrong from the press conference, where he gets under Armstrong's skin and Armstrong says, "Are you who I think you are?" And then has this, it's searing. Well worth a listen.
And is an angry guest, Anton, always a help in making a great interview?
I think an angry guest can make something of nothing. There's a load of interviews which should be just innocuous vanilla and slide by and not even be noticed. And if the guest gets rattled, it becomes something. So there's a very good one, which is Chris Wallace, who is, he's kind of the nearest thing Fox News has to what we would regard as balanced journalism. But he's still on the Fox News side of things. And he did an interview with Bill Clinton about his performance during the aftermath of, or the run to 9/11, how hard he had gone hunting for Osama bin Laden. And the fact of Clinton's anger ends up making something out of nothing.
You did Fox's bidding on this show. You did your nice little conservative hit job on me. But I want to know how many people in the Bush administration you asked this question of. I want to know how many people in the Bush administration you asked, why didn't you do anything about the coal? I want to know how many people you asked, why did you fire Dick Clark? I want to know how many people you asked
about
asked. This.
Did you ever watch Fox News Sunday, sir?
I don't believe you asked them that.
We asked plenty of questions.
You didn't ask that, did you? Tell
about
the truth,
the
U.S.
coal?
Tell the truth.
With Iraq and Afghanistan, there's plenty of stuff to ask.
Did you ever ask that? You set this meeting up, and you came here under false pretenses and said that you'd spend half the time talking about what we did out there to raise $7 billion plus. But
President Clinton, if you look at the questions here, you'll see half the questions about that. I didn't think this was going to set you off on such a tear.
You launched it. It set off on a tear because you people ask me questions you don't ask the other side.
That was one where there was an interview around his foundation. It should have been another one of those totally unnoticed interviews. But he ends up leaning across, tapping Chris Wallace on the knee and going dry in the mouth. He's so angry. But you could at least say in that one, well, you know, the topic was to do with Osama bin Laden and it was fraught anyway. There are the instances where something which shouldn't have any whiff of cordite to it goes totally off the rails. And the one defining example of that, Claire, I think, has to be Meg Ryan's appearance on Michael Parkinson for the sheer epic levels of tetchiness that she displayed.
You said once that acting was not in your nature.
I did.
You did say that. Yes, okay. You did say that. Are you denying that you said that? I mean, it's not a day.
No, it seems like something I'd say. I think what I meant was that it always feels very awkward for me to be in front of an audience or in the spotlight. It doesn't come all that naturally.
So why do it?
I don't know. Maybe you can help me out with that. I'm compelled, though. I like it. I like the work a lot.
But you can't have one without the other, can you? You can't do what you do and be famous and well-known without...
I think you can certainly be an actor and not be a movie star.
Well, but you are a movie star.
Yes.
By choice.
Seemingly.
So, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
She just didn't want to be there.
Oh, no, and the bit at the end then, the famous bit where it gets to, if you were me, what would you do now? I'd wrap it up.
Oh, yeah. It's just your worst nightmare. If somebody doesn't want to be there, there is no point.
No, and she resented him deeply and went on subsequently to say that she felt that he was like a patronising father. Because, of course, she doesn't know who he is. She arrives in and this is a random person interviewing her. The UK public think he's our legend. But the coming together meant that literally for the 30 years since it, Michael Parkinson has been asked about it again and again and again.
Now, do you give any credit, because you've spoken about the producers there and the guests and how it works, do you give any credit at all, Anton, to the interviewers?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you have to look particularly at the capacity of some interviewers to make something out of, to weave it out of whole cloth. On this side of the water, a lot of the credit for that goes to Vincent Brown, who on his radio program and TV program could manage to make something that shouldn't be anything highly entertaining by ritually disemboweling one of his guests for sport. So we have the famous instances of Stephen Donnelly when Vincent Brown had a go at him for changing political parties, Conor Lennon, where Conor Lennon, then minister, ends up saying that he will come at you full force to Vincent and getting wide-eyed while he does it. But I don't think any of them compare to the, across the water, the Jeremy Paxman, Michael Howard interview. Do you remember this one?
Yes, 11 times. Same question.
11, that's exactly it. He asked him if he had threatened to overrule the Metropolitan Police Commissioner. Michael Howard was then potential Labour leader, or Conservative leader, I should say. And Howard dodged it a little. And he asked it again and again and again. And he went 11 times with the same question and ruined Howard's reputation in the process. But my favourite bit about it is that everybody believed at the time that Paxman was a terrier. And he subsequently was asked about it in a documentary. And he said that his producer had come into the talk back in his ear and said, the next guest is stuck on the M25.
So he had to string it out for time.
So he strung it out by torturing him.
Listen, that's one thing, you know, going down that hectoring route. There's another skill, though, isn't there? Getting someone and guiding them into hoisting themselves with their own petard. It can be a little trickier, and you have a great example of this.
Trickiest thing of all, but when it is done well, it is just magnificent, because often the guest doesn't realise where they're heading, sometimes until they're already there, and even in some cases until the audience realises ahead of them where they're going to be. And the best one, both domestically and I think possibly in any interview you'll hear anywhere, was one done by the late Marion Finucane. Now, this is just after September 11th, and of course, in the same way now as a lot of news coverage is about what will be the next pandemic, after 9/11, all of the news coverage was, what about terror attacks? What, you know, are we properly prepared? So Marion had on Joe Jacob, the minister responsible for our disaster preparedness, and she began to ask him, what would happen if a plane crashed into Sellafield and it looked like there might be nuclear fallout heading in the Irish direction? And he began to talk about the timing of the response. And in a stroke of genius, she puts a clock on. And she then begins to give him a real-time, minute-by-minute disaster.
The first point of contact is the Gardaí, and that's where the emergency plan steps into gear.
What steps in?
The emergency plan.
Yeah, but what is it? What happens
well,
then?
Well, the first of all, the alert would come to the Garda Communications Centre.
So I got my message 7 minutes ago. What would have happened by now?
By now, the how will the information and advice be given to the public?
Yeah.
And your question and the answer to it will be on my fact sheet, which will be in every home in Ireland weeks from now.
But tell me now.
I will tell you now. All kind of media information will be posted on the website of my department.
And what advice? Like, we're 8 minutes on now. What should I have said to the listeners?
That information will issue based on the technical expertise.
You're going to give me the fact sheet in a couple of weeks' time and I'll read it. But I'm talking now, it happened 9 minutes ago.
9 minutes ago, I'm telling you, first of all, information.
The inimitable Marion Finucane there speaking to Joe Jacob and Anton Savage. Thank you very much indeed for bringing that to